I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Good morning, Marissa.
Good morning.
We've switched our recording times.
We have. We'll see if this impacts our, you know, our alertness, and we'll see if it who knows? I mean, maybe we're more morning people. Well, you are a morning person. So
I am a morning person.
So this isn't a challenge for you.
So hopefully all of our listeners are listening in the morning, because I just say good morning anyways. But yeah, so I think our alertness is going to be there. Who knows? We are probably the only people that would record a podcast on a weekend, first thing in the morning.
Probably.
But, you know, you have little kids, and I'm just an old guy that gets up in the morning, so it makes sense. So today we're going to talk about conversations. And the post that I sent out this morning simply says, how are the conversations going? And I kind of built this around, I had a wonderful experience. Last week I was able to be with an organization, and I won't mention the name of the organization, not because I don't want to embarrass them, but because I just don't think it's appropriate. But one of my favorite groups to be with, I do a lot of work with this organization, and the chief executive of this organization invited me to come to one of his administrative retreats, and he asked me to do a teaching on the DISC behavioral assessment topic, basically our dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance behavior profiles. And what was very interesting was, so I spent the morning with them and then early afternoon, and this is a high-functioning team. You know, John Maxwell, in his book, The 17 Indisputable Laws of Teamwork, says that interaction fuels action with a team. And that's true, but not all the action that interaction fuels is good. So if a team can communicate well, and they understand how to communicate well, they can have great action and move the organization forward. If they don't, if they start taking things personally, if they don't understand how a person communicates, the action can be sometimes very caustic to the organization. This is a high-functioning team that I was meeting with, and there were probably 25, 30 people in the room. They functioned very well, and yet this senior leader said, I need you to come do this training. I want you to bring my team closer together. We need to understand each other more. And what was even more amazing than the fact that this is a high-functioning team that asked me to come was 30 minutes after the training ended, when they were going to do some, and they invited me to join them with this. The neat part was they actually invited my wife to come to this offsite, which was down in Watkins Glen. So she was able to experience all of this with me. But 30 minutes after the training was done, we were getting ready to go on a tour type of thing as a team building exercise. He said, so Dave, what's next? And I'm thinking, you've got a high functioning team. We just spent, you know, the better part of a day together. And already you're saying, okay, what's next? That's why this is such a high functioning team. And so he actually said to me, he said, so we're going to do our quarterly lunch and learns. So why don't we think about maybe the first quarter? What would you think of the first quarter of our fiscal year? You come in, and which would probably bring it in probably September. Why don't you come in and talk about what we just trained on, and let's see if there's follow-up. How are the people doing with it? And I just, that's why I love working with this organization, because they are so focused on growth and professional development. And you can see the team is a super high-functioning team. And even my wife commented, because we spent the morning together and then lunch and then part of the afternoon in this training piece, and she could just observe the interaction between them. And she goes, this is amazing how these folks, you know, get along and interact and have fun with each other. So when you invest in communication, when you invest in team building, when you invest in developing your people, it really shows. And the communication piece really centers around the DISC, understanding how people communicate, how they prefer to communicate. It just, it smooths over all the rough edges, and you're not like wondering, what did that person mean by that? So that was a really quick backdrop for what we really want to talk about this morning, which is communicating within or understanding our behavior styles.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the four. We have the D, which is a dominance. We have the I, which is influence. We have the S, which is steadiness. We have the C, which is compliance. So as I started talking about this and explaining it to you, what were some initial thoughts that went through your head?
Well, and I think we've talked about some of this before, but I wanted to kind of come back to that, you know, all four, there's no like perfect profile, right? Like they all have their limitations and they all have their, you know, great things and qualities about them as well. And I think, you know, some organizations are probably, like you said, having better communication than others. I'm going to assume or guess that those organizations have a good mix, right? Like they're not all one profile or two profiles. Right. They are a good mix, right?
Yes.
What have you seen? Have you seen organizations that have too many or like too much of a good thing or too much of a not so good thing?
So, I think the key that you brought out was that all four behavior profiles have strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. So I've switched from the training that I use on DISC now is a Maxwell-based DISC. I used to do another one, and I prefer the Maxwell one because it focuses a little bit more on the leadership piece. But the organization that I was with, one of the things that I do if I do a training, I will actually map out for them everybody that's in the training, where they are in terms of their DISC profile.
Mm-hmm.
This group did not have one D in it.
Interesting.
Which was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they said that there were a few folks that did not attend the training that might fall into the D category.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another organization that I've done a significant amount of work with that had almost no I behavior profiles. And oftentimes, organizations, based on what they do, because professions tend to shift towards certain behavior profiles, and maybe, you know what, maybe that, I'm thinking out loud, and we'll decide this for sure by the time we end the podcast, but this might be a two-parter to help people understand, you know, how a profession could influence your DISC behavior. But, The value in the group, you can't just have one, because clearly the organization won't function well. But the key, even more than having them evenly distributed, is having them understand the values and challenges of each. And this organization really knows how, and so does the other one that I've done work with. They're aware of what they're missing. And part of it could be, and I've told them this, we typically hire the people that we're comfortable with. So we hire people that are like us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem when we hire people like us. So again, a good team is going to have a blend. Never just one. It's best to have four. But oftentimes based on a culture piece or a professional focus, you may miss one or the other. Hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
You know, maybe what we should do quickly, just so people can get their minds around this one, is let me give you some tips for recognizing your behavior profiles in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually look at it with just a couple things. Are they introverted? So, and we talked about this. One of our questions that we answered a couple weeks back was, you know, can a high C, high S behavior profile be a leader? And the answer is absolutely. But your C's, your compliance, and your S, your steadiness, are typically more reserved. They're more introverted. They're not going to be the first people that are going to speak up in a group, especially if they don't know the group very well. So if they're introverted, they're going to be a C or an S. If they're extroverted, they will be a D or an I. Now, if they're extroverted and they're very direct and they're very blunt, they're clearly a D, a dominance. If they're extroverted and they're very talkative, they're very chatty, they're more of a friendly, laughing, joking kind of person, they're going to be an I. And then if the person, another one is this, they are task-focused or relationship-focused. So if they're very task-focused, they're going to be a D or a C. But if they're more people-focused, they will be an S or an I. So with just those two things, are they introverted, extroverted, task-focused, or people-focused, we can tell pretty quickly what a person is. Now, here's another thing, is none of us, well, I shouldn't say none, less than 1% of the population is extreme in only one area.
Mm-hmm.
So we could just say, for the most part, almost everyone is a beautiful blend of multiple behavior profiles. And that was another reason why I preferred the new assessments that I'm using now, because instead of giving us just a high D, high I, high S, or high C, it gives us a blend. You know, mine, for instance, is an IS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some are three letters.
Yeah.
And so and it's the blending of all of these that really affects who we are and how strong we are in one area or the other. So let's talk about communication piece, because that was really what my blog post was about.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think about the behavior profile before you start the conversation. And I tell people, you know, when you're entering into a conversation, think about the profile that that person has. So if I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to a person that's a high D, they don't like to waste time. They want to be the expert. So you have to be very brief, very direct and to the point. Don't ramble on. Don't just give them way too much information. They're not going to want, they will shut you down completely.
Mm-hmm.
You need to help them by focusing specifically on results. They're a lot of people think that D's are kind of, mean and arrogant, because they can come across that way. But the problem is, or the reason for that is that they're very urgent. They're time focused. They don't want to waste any time because there's all kinds of great opportunities that they want to win over. Everything in life is a challenge for them. So when you focus on results, they can see where the conversation's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You want to show them what's good for them. You know, what do they get out of it? If you're going to go there with some issue, you want to discuss the problem and its effects and its outcomes. Just give them all the information so that they can make a good decision and move on. What you don't want to do is be indecisive. You know, you don't want to not answer their objections, because they're going to see through that as you not really being forthright or even knowing the answers that you want. Don't give them a ton of details. Don't offer opinions. You know, they want to know the facts. They want to know exactly what's going on. And if you go off on a tangent, you lose them. So if I look at those hindering factors right there, being indecisive, your high C and your high S by nature will be less likely to make a decision. Not answering objections directly, your eyes rarely answer an objection directly because they don't want to lose a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining too many details, your C's are going to give a ton of details. Go off on tangents, your eyes always go off on tangents. Now, I just gave you a key right there. If somebody says always and never, they're an I.
Mm-hmm.
Very few other I don't know if I've heard other people other than I's use always nevers. Because they're absolute statements that just, it's an illogical statement. So I don't know if that makes sense, you know, kind of giving mm-hmm. the characteristic and then the hindering factor. When you've had to interact with D's, what have been some of your challenges?
Well, I am most high in I, so I love to talk and, you know, how's your weekend, how the kids, how's this, how's yep. that, and so like controlling those kind of indirect, non-necessary conversations, I think that's
yeah
that can be difficult for me. So I have to, like, actively remember, okay, be direct, don't go off on tangents. You know, my indecisiveness is probably not a good thing. So that, I think those are mostly my challenges. But I think I've gotten better at it because you and I talk about this a lot. And right. I've gone through the training with you. Well, the old training. I haven't been through the new one, but I've gone through it twice with you. So I think I've had some good practice.
Yeah. So how do you, when you have to communicate with a D, do you, is there anything you have to think about before you enter into that communication, or is there any way you need to prepare yourself?
Yes, I definitely try to be prepared and almost like anticipate the questions I might be asked, or like anticipate what might be discussed so that I can be as direct as possible instead of having to think like, okay, well, you know, kind of like talking it out. Like if I was talking to you, I would probably just like talk and talk and talk and we'd get there. But with a D, I definitely try to think more ahead of the potential questions or situations so that I can be prepared and direct.
Exactly. And the other thing you need to be prepared for as when you engage in a conversation with a D is they're going to come across as being, to anybody other than the D, overly confident, almost arrogant. They're not going to appear very personable. They only communicate what they need to communicate. And there's this joke that I use, story, whatever you want to call it, that to describe a D in a conversation. So there was a husband and wife. They were married for like 15 years. It's their anniversary. They go out to dinner. And the wife, you know, just turns to the husband and says, you know, why don't you tell me that you love me anymore? You used to say it, but you haven't. And he said, well, when we got married, I told you I loved you, right? And she goes, yes. And he goes, if it changes, I'll let you know. And, you know, while that's just a silly little story type of thing, in the real world, there's a lot of truth to that. In that an employee, you know, wonders, why isn't their boss praising them? Why isn't their boss saying they're doing a good job? Why isn't their boss complimenting them? If the boss is a high D, the boss is figuring, I'm keeping them. I'm not bringing up any criticisms. You know, they got a raise at the end of last year. Of course I'm happy with them. That's the problem. Where when an organ, if we under, so if I look at it from both perspectives, if I'm the leader in that organization, I need to be aware of the DISC behaviors of my team. And if I do have some I's and some S's that need some feedback frequently, and when we come to I's, they need it daily, a few times a day, in essence, I have to give it, I have to offer it. But now if I'm the subordinate, and I realize that my leader is a D, they don't mean it personal, and I need to find someplace else to get my affirmations. So knowing the behavior profiles just eases the tension in the organization tremendously. It allows us to really focus on the work at hand and really learning to value. What I tell people is every one of these behavior profiles is, has certain giftedness, but they also have challenges. And the strengths, the giftedness, when it's overused, becomes a weakness. So the D, being very direct, being very dominant, being able to be a person of conviction and moving forward without fear, if you overuse that, it's arrogance. So that's kind of the example that I would use for that. So now when I see how long it took us to talk about Ds, this is going to be a two-part podcast, which is fine.
Yep.
Because I don't want to rush through it. So let's talk about the I's.
Okay.
When you're communicating with the I's, so again, this is going to be a person that's extroverted, that's outgoing, that loves to tell stories, that loves to tell you how their weekend was, that they wants to tell you what they had for dinner the night before, even though you didn't ask. The new training even shows our I's as people dressing with more colorful clothing.
Interesting.
Which I'm not certain about that, because I don't dress in crazy clothing. But my son Mike, who is an eye, has no problem wearing more what I would consider colorful, edgy kind of clothing.
So,
when we're communicating, we need to make sure that we don't let them do all the talking, because the eyes won't shut up. They're just going to talk and talk and talk. If you have to make sure that you don't ignore the ideas that the eyes bring. Eyes are wonderful idea people. They mm-hmm. come up with great ideas. And if you're going to have a conversation with them, allow some time for socializing. Don't ever walk into an eye's office or up to an eye's desk and just start talking. If it's the first thing in the morning, say, "Good morning, how are you?" One of the things that I found amazing is that for 18 years I worked, when I worked at SelfLock, my boss was a high D and I was a high I. And every time he walked into my office in the morning or walked by my office, he would say, "Good morning, Dave. How are you? How was your evening?" That was not his behavior profile.
Mm-hmm.
That was mine. And he knew it. If I went to his office, it was all business. So we kind of, whose turf we were on, determined how we were going to communicate. If you're working with an eye, now this is something that you don't have an issue with, but I do. Follow up on details with an eye, because eyes miss things. We forget things because we're moving from thing to thing very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your S is high enough that you follow through on things on your own. You've got systems to take care of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I'm working on it, you know, but at 58, hey. Oh, well. I'm still working. You know what? I got to get better every year. Another note they put here in our notes is, you know, if you're communicating with an eye, 4 short 10-minute discussions are better than 1 40-minute discussion. Because, you know, our attention span is so short that we would just get mired in, like I tell people, I can go down a rabbit hole and I have no idea where I'm coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens in our podcasts.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden I'm like, oh my goodness, how did I get here? How do I find my way back out? So when we're interacting again with eyes, we need to be careful to not let them talk so much that we waste time.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have to... And think about it this way, too. An eye is very sensitive to criticism. So you can't just say, "Hey, let's get back on track." Use their own words to direct the conversation back. You could say something like, "You know, Dave, a minute ago you were talking about this. I'd like to know more about that."
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice, polite way of saying, "Dave, stop it.
Pull it in."
Yeah, reel it in quickly. Eyes will be very quick to agree with you, but they'll also change their mind quickly. So if they get them to agree with you, get it in writing, you know, close the sale as quickly as you can. Don't rely only on facts and figures. The eye really wants to know what you think. They want to know, is this something that you like? Is this something you believe in? Eyes actually believe that sometimes figures can be wrong. Facts can be skewed. And so they're looking for that human piece that's going to dig in a little bit deeper into their heart. Don't come off as being unfriendly or cold.
Mm-hmm.
So if we think about this, so let's get back to our D's, not saying, "Hey, how are you? How was your evening?" Or C's, which again are very task-focused and even introverted. There's conflict right there just in the behavior profiles. So with my eyes, I got to make sure that I'm for almost over the top nice and friendly.
Mm-hmm.
As the president of a company, there were times when I wondered, gee, I hope I'm doing a good job. Now, I had 4 board meetings a year where they would tell me how I was doing. You know, the company was succeeding most of the time. Not always. We had some rough years. But even through all that, I was still wondering, hey, I wonder if I'm doing a good job. Nobody's told me I've been doing a good job today. My wife even said to me once, she goes, "You know, how many compliments or strokes do you need a day?" And my answer was just one more. It's just, it's the nature of that, an elevated eye, that these are things that we need. So you said that you're an eye. I don't remember how high your eye was. What's your second highest? Is it an S or a C?
My I, S, and C were like all pretty level. And I think I was just like a bump above.
That's what I thought.
But they, yeah.
I didn't remember exactly.
Yeah, they were pretty level. And it, you know, as I go through, you know, I've gone through and kind of looked at these again, I definitely do think that that is true, because I find myself in all three of these categories.
Yeah, and you know what? I should send you a link to the new assessment.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make a note to do that, because yeah. I think you'll it. The new assessments are nice in that they really focus on three graphs, mm-hmm. which help us understand ourselves even better. And I don't want to get too far into the weeds. Maybe we can talk about it more next week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are three graphs? So I'll give them a little teaser. So. With the assessments we're using now, we actually see our public self. This is how we project ourselves to the outside world. Our core self, which is us when we're stressed. And then this mirror, this is how we really think we are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of cool to see yeah. how your behaviors shift based on situations you're in and based on your own awareness type of thing. It's really cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any problems that or challenges that you see communicating with eyes that maybe I missed? Or reeling them in? You can talk about me, because my eye's pretty high.
No, I think you covered it. I don't think I had anything.
You know, the eyes bring you, just like the D's have strengths, the mm-hmm. The eyes, you know, they're idea people, they verbalize things, they love to be out in interacting with people. And the problem is that that giftedness, that strength, becomes a weakness when they're too much of a show person. You know, mm-hmm. they love the limelight too much. They're afraid to take a stand because they don't want to be disliked. They can agree with everyone quickly. So the point is that understanding the strength, the giftedness, but then also understanding that when I overuse this, this becomes a real problem for me. You know, so if I'm working with it, just to recap, if I'm working with a D, I need to understand that they're going to be direct, they're going to be blunt, they're going to get right to the point, and I shouldn't take it personal, and they're not going to give a lot of praise.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm working with an I, communicating with an I need to know that I need to be more talkative than I normally would be. I need to listen to their verbalizing of things more than I would like. But then I also shouldn't let them take that conversation down too many rabbit holes. I need to steer them back, guide them back to what the key focus is. So those are probably I think if I was going to use some points, those would be the ones that I would hit on for the D's and the I's. So next week, we can talk about the S's and the C's.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably try to give our listeners some more examples of, you know, maybe statistically how many are in each of these categories, because I think it is shifting. What I've been seeing, the data I'm seeing, is that it's shifting from where it used to be. And that's not unusual for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can think of any questions you might have that
yeah.
we can talk about next week as well, that people might not think to ask about behavior profiles.
Sounds good.
Any special plans in the next week or so?
Oh, you know, not really. Just kind of enjoying the summer. It's been hot lately.
It's been hot.
So trying
by the pool.
To stay cool and keep the girls cool. And just, you know, I think I said this last summer, but kind of trying to focus on having an intentional summer where we do things that
yes.
are important to our family, which means
yep.
you know, saying no to things that kind of don't fit with that. But yeah, how about you?
Well, one of the things I want to just, the comment you made, intentional, you say no to the good to mm-hmm. make time for the best.
Mm-hmm.
People need to be willing to do that. So no, nothing special. I do want to say something. My boat, my engine still is not in my boat. We're working on it. There's no problem. It's just taking a little longer than I think any of us thought. But on the 3rd of July, my good friends that still had a boat on Otisco Lake, we saw them at Bible study at church, and the husband, Emil, said, "Do you want to go out to the lake and look at the flares?" It's like, my 4th of July weekend was rescued by my dear friends.
Oh, that's so great.
So we met him out there, and then they even let us, he texted me July 4th in the morning and said, "Does anybody in the family want to use our boat? I know your boat's out of commission."
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. That's so we great. Took, the kids that were available out to go, just to have some pizza and some time on the lake. But you can't beat good friends.
Nope.
So.
That's wonderful.
So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.